tuned to Yesterday with an hour of collection curios. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. The Old Time Radio Collection at WRVO Public Media, known as the Ellen Robinson Memorial Library, contains tens of thousands of broadcasts on reel-to-reel tape. There's a vast archive of the big-name shows from radio's golden age, but among the shelves are series with very few surviving episodes, one-off programs, underheard tapes, and long considered to be rare broadcasts. In this hour, we get the reel spinning with programs not yet heard on our show, or at the very least, on the air in a very long time. Later in this hour, a unique comedy detective program called McGarry and His Mouse. But first, most likely one of the first radio dramas on the air that exclusively focused on the true stories of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, called The Queen's Men. It made its debut on Canadian radio in 1954 and was one of many syndicated series actually produced in London. That's England, not Ontario. By Harry Allen Towers, like the Orson Welles-hosted program The Black Museum. Towers employed Canadian actors and the Canadian radio producer and renowned musician John Adaskin for an authentic voice for the production, and it was certainly in capable hands, as Adaskin was a longtime producer for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation before it was even known as the CBC. Next, an episode in the series seldom heard in the U.S. from 1954.
The Queen's Men. For the first time, authentic stories of the world-famous Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Tales of men who for almost 100 years have helped to keep peace in Canada. The Queen's Men.
Yes, in all my years on the force, that smuggling case was the closest thing I've ever seen to the perfect crime.
You were in on it, sir?
Well, briefly, yes. Most of it was carried by Corporal Dan Selkirk.
The smuggler was a Britisher, wasn't he?
Oh, no, Australian. Harry Prescott, his name was. A likable, friendly chap. Not the sort of person you'd suspect of anything. Made friends easily and inspired liking and trust in them. It was in 1947. He came over on the line of Victoria. Most of the passengers were new to Canada, some new residents, some businessmen. From what we were able to piece together afterwards, Prescott made a lot of friends on board. He even gave a little party the night before their arrival in Vancouver.
It's hard to believe it's your last night on the shipboard.
Yes, and a little sad, too. It's been a very pleasant crossing.
Oh, we all agree with you there, and next stop is Canada. You haven't been there before, have you?
No, but I can't tell you how I'm looking forward to it. It's been my highest aspiration for many years to settle in Western Canada and get established there in my profession.
You haven't said much about your work, Prescott.
Oh, it's rather dull to the layman. You're in business, aren't you?
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, you see, I'm on the scientific end of things.
Oh, a scientist, eh?
More or less. It's pretty complicated. I'm working on a couple of experiments. If they're successful, then I'll be more inclined to talk about my work. What kind of business are you in?
Oh, automotive industry.
And are you settling in Canada?
No. It's just a routine business trip. I make one or two a year, you know. But it's a fine country. I'm sure you'll like it.
I'm sure I will.
Next. Step right up, sir. Your name, please.
Harry Prescott, from Murraytown, Australia.
Prescott. Oh, yes, here we are. I think they're going through your effects right now. You have a number of large, heavy boxes among your things, haven't you?
Yeah, too right I have.
What's in those boxes?
Mostly books and laboratory equipment.
Your occupation?
Scientist.
What kind of scientist?
Okay, I'm going to throw a box, Jim.
Oh, fine. This is Mr. Prescott right here.
How do you, sir? Your effects have been cleared. Everything's in order.
Oh, fine. I'll take the bags and the trunk along to my hotel. But I wonder if you could deliver the 12 boxes for me.
Certainly, sir. Where to, sir?
Next, please. Step this way, madam.
It's a warehouse here in Vancouver. Now, just a minute. I have the address written down at right here somewhere.
Oh, there's no hurry, Mr. Prescott.
Oh, I thought you men would be pretty rushed.
Oh, no, not today. A quiet day, this. Seems like this boatload contained a real honest bunch of people. We found nothing suspicious at all.
Did you expect to?
Oh, we always keep our eyes open. Smuggling is a popular racket these days.
Really? Mm-hmm. What kind of smuggling?
Well, the most lucrative is gold. Difficult to get by with, of course, and the penalty is stiff, but for anyone who can get away with it, the returns are tremendous, so we have to keep a sharp eye out.
Yes, I should certainly think so. Here's the address.
So Harry Prescott settled down quietly in a Vancouver hotel. Thus began the second phase in an almost perfectly planned crime. The Canadian government had by that time appointed the Foreign Exchange Control Board, under whose provisions the export and import of gold was declared illegal, except under direct permit from the government. And why did this order affect Mr. Harry Prescott? Well, because, secreted in the most ingenious way in the 12 heavy boxes of so-called books and laboratory equipment, were 124 bars of almost pure gold, with the approximate value of $120,000. The Canadian laws had already been broken with the landing of the gold on Canadian soil, and Prescott's next task was to dispose of the stuff. He began to make friends, and the people of Vancouver liked this man with the Australian accent, who had such a keen interest in all matters concerning the new land. He sought his acquaintances among jewelers and firms engaged in the purchase and manufacture of gold rings, watches, and instruments. He sat and listened, and piled up information.
Oh, yes, we have to report every purchase of gold to the assay office, which is under government control.
I would certainly think so.
Mind you, we're allowed to buy reclaimed gold in the form of watches, rings, and mountings for teeth, you know, that sort of thing, and to pay for these by arrangement with the customer.
You can do that, can you?
Oh, but then we have to forward to the city police department a list of such articles purchased every day.
I see. And I suppose you have to record the name and address of the person you bought them from.
Oh, indeed we do. There's a severe penalty for evading that.
I suppose quite a few people have tried from time to time around this city.
Oh, they sure have. You know, I almost got into serious trouble myself once. I bought some stuff from a big gold smelting company and then found out that the fellow had obtained it illegally.
Police got in on it, did they?
Well, a matter of fact, they didn't. I found out about it myself and made this fella take it back. I didn't want any trouble, and I warned him he'd better take it easy, too. Well, mind you, he was pretty grateful. They never got anything on him, but I've certainly kept away from him and any dealings with him since.
He's still in business in Vancouver, is he?
Oh, yes.
So, you don't know how he's operating?
No. As I said, I keep out of his way.
Well, that's interesting. Because I have a friend in the gold business. He's new here, too. And, of course, he's strictly honest. I'd appreciate knowing this fella's name so that I can warn my friend to keep away from him, too.
Well, I guess it's all right to tell you. Mind you, I wouldn't want to get him into any trouble, though, in case he's decided to go straight. Now, you won't mention this to anyone else, huh?
Oh, certainly not. I'll give you my word. Dinky die.
Well, he's Ben Souter of the Western Gold Smelting Company.
Well, thanks for tipping me off.
Well, you know, we gold dealers want to stick together to keep the profession on the up and up, you know?
I agree with you 100%. You can't be too careful. Mr. Souter?
Yes? Come in. You're Mr. Prescott.
That's right.
Please sit down.
Thank you.
Sorry I kept you waiting so long. I got all tied up on the phone.
Quite all right. I got lots of time.
Well, you mentioned on the phone that you were interested in some information about gold.
Yes. I have a brother arriving shortly from Australia. He intends to establish a small manufacturing business. He's a watchmaker.
Oh, yes?
And he asked me to send him some information about the availability of gold in this country.
Oh, I see.
I've heard you're one of the biggest men in the business.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
Well, I'm sure you know more about it than I do, at any rate. I thought you might be willing to show me around a bit, to introduce me to the market, so to speak.
You're new here yourself, I gather.
Yes.
And may I ask your business?
I'm rather interested in gold myself.
Oh, is that so?
Yes. From what I've heard about you, it occurred to me we might get along quite well.
And so Prescott began to cultivate Ben Suter, trying to find out whether the rumor of dishonesty in connection with him had any foundation. It doesn't take long for two crooks to understand each other, and after testing the ground thoroughly, they got down to business. Together, they began to plan the safest and most lucrative way to unload the gold bars. They made a good team. Prescott in possession of the metal, and Suter having the connections and necessary knowledge of how to evade the law.
Well, Harry, I think I've worked out the best plan. Canadian laws are too tough. No one's ever got away with it yet that I know of.
So what do you suggest?
This. If you were able to smuggle it into Canada, you could probably get it safely over the border into the States, couldn't you?
Possibly.
Well, I know a big dealer in Chicago. I've already contacted him. He's very eager. He'll take all you have to offer and make a trip up here first to discuss the plans with you.
How do you know he can be trusted?
I've dealt with him before. He's okay. Don't worry about that. Now, he'll get us a better price, and it's a whole lot safer.
Well, that isn't a bad idea. Not bad at all.
Now, the question is to decide first how much you want to sell him.
How much does he want?
Well, he wants all you got.
Does he know how much I've got?
No, but whatever it is, he wants it.
I'll sell him half. $60,000 worth.
Well, why not the whole works? Why keep half of it around? It might be discovered.
Not where I've got it hidden. Now, I want to hang on to half of it. Price may go up. $60,000 will do fine for now.
Well, that's your decision, then, huh?
That's it. How soon can we make the arrangements?
Well, he said he'd come up on 24 hours' notice. I'll phone him tonight. You'd better put your mind to the business of getting that stuff across the border.
All right, Ben, here's the plan. I'm pretty good with tools, see? I figure I'll hide the gold in the chassis of my car. We'll take it out into the country somewhere to do the job. You know of a good safe place?
I sure do. Look, I've got a small farm just outside town. We can drive the car out there and do the job in the barn.
Good. I think I'd better go across the border alone, and you cross by bus and meet me in some small town just across the border.
Yeah. How about Greenville? It's about 70 miles south. It's big enough that I can check into a hotel and meet you there without attracting any attention.
That sounds fine. Then we'll drive on to Chicago together and close the deal.
How'd you like my friend, Harry?
Frankly, I didn't like him a bit. Personally, that is. From a business point of view, he's exactly the man I want.
They were right about one thing. It was beautifully simple. And that, of course, was where Prescott had always been so clever. Crossing the border, Prescott had no trouble at the immigration office. He exchanged pleasantries with the officials as they gave his car a cursory search. He stated that his business in Chicago was to inquire about equipment for his laboratory. Then he was allowed to pass through the routine customs examination on the United States side of the line. He walked towards his car. The worst part of the trip was over. But he was about to get into the car, and he was approached by a tall, grim-looking United States Customs officer.
Excuse me, sir.
Yes?
I'll have to ask you to wait a while.
Well, why, certainly. May I ask what for?
A routine check. We've been tipped off that smuggled gold is on its way through somewhere. We'll have to do a thorough search of your car. Will you step this way, please?
Harry Prescott was just a few hours short of unloading half his gold bars and acquiring plenty of the ready cash to fulfill his many dreams and aspirations. But justice, in the form of the United States Customs Department, had interrupted his dream of fortune. It took but a few minutes to discover that gold hidden in Prescott's car, and it was then that the RCMP got in on the case. I was OC at the detachment in Vancouver, and I called instantly on Corporal Selkirk, who was attached for special duty to the Foreign Exchange Control Board.
You wanted to see me, sir?
Oh, yes, Corporal. Sit down. What are you working on at the moment?
Oh, going through some reports. Just routine work, sir. Nothing urgent.
Good. Then I want you to clean up your desk and be ready to leave for Seattle tonight.
Sure. What's the routine, sir?
A word has just come from the United States Customs branch there that a fellow named Harry Prescott from Vancouver was picked up at the border, charged with illegally transporting 62 bars of gold into the United States.
Hey, he's a big operator.
You know anything about him?
No, sir, not a thing. Never heard of him.
Well, I'll assign someone to investigate him this afternoon. The U.S. authorities have seized the gold, of course. Now, our job is to find out about this man, and if he has any more gold hidden here in Vancouver.
Yeah, it's quite possible he has.
It won't be easy to get the information out of him, of course. That's why I'm sending you, Selkirk. You've a special training along those lines, and I've noticed you have an aptitude for it as well.
Sure glad of the assignment, sir. There's the question of where he obtained the gold in the first place.
That's right. They've arrested him and taken him to police headquarters in Seattle. And they want someone from this office to go and have a talk to him. I want you to go, Selkirk, and find out all you can. We'll have some information on him by the time you return. You leave tonight. Your papers are all in order.
Where are you taking me to, officer?
Friend of yours, see it.
Friend of mine? May I ask who?
Canadian, anyways. Member of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
Oh, I see.
They'll talk to you in this room here. Well, here he is, Corporal. All right, go along in.
Thank you, officer. I'll notify you when I'm through.
I'll be right outside the door, Corporal.
You're Harry Prescott?
That is correct.
I'm Corporal Selkirk of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
I'm very glad to see you, Corporal. You know, this whole thing is most embarrassing.
Yeah, I should think it would be.
It's all a misunderstanding, although I can see how the mistake was made.
Oh, you feel this was a false arrest, then?
Well, as I say, I can understand how it came about. You see, I'm afraid I wasn't aware of the proper method of transporting my gold.
Okay, let's start there. You say your gold, Mr. Prescott. You're the owner of the gold, then?
Oh, yes, I'm a legitimate owner.
How did you come by it?
Well, I've accumulated it by honest hard work over a period of years in Australia. Then I began to fear an attack by Japan at some later date, and I was anxious to remove it to a safe place where invasion would be improbable.
So you brought it to Canada?
Yes.
Did you declare the gold when you brought it in?
No, I didn't know the law about that until later. I mean, until it was too late to declare it.
Well, why was it too late?
Well, you see, it would have appeared as though I deliberately smuggled the gold into Canada, which wasn't my intention at all.
Nor to smuggle it into the United States?
No, certainly not. Brought it over here simply because I could get a higher price for it.
You claim, then, that you've had no dishonest intentions at all.
None whatever, Corporal.
Well, in that case, you'll be willing to cooperate with us in whatever way you can.
Why, certainly. Anything at all you want to know.
Well, first of all, as the matter of the remaining gold. The rest of your supplies, still in Vancouver, should be registered with a Foreign Exchange Control Board. Well, now that you've discovered your mistake in not registering the gold in the first place, it'll prove your good intentions. And it's the job of the RCM police now to locate it, subject to decision by the courts as to its legal ownership.
I see.
If you can establish that it does belong to you and pay duty on it, you'll get it back.
Well, there is some further gold in Vancouver, as a matter of fact, and I realize now my error in not reporting it.
Good. If you'll just tell me where the gold is located.
I'd like to give the matter some thought first, Corporal, and take it up briefly with my lawyer. He's on his way down here now.
Fine.
Is that all you want me for now?
Oh, pretty nearly. One or two minor things I'd like to ask you about. Now, make yourself comfortable. Cigarette?
Well, don't mind if I do. More comfortable here than in my cell anyway.
Morning, Corporal. Have a nice trip.
Fine. The inspector in?
Yep. Set to send you in the minute you arrive.
Thanks.
Come in. Oh, Corporal.
Good morning, sir. My train just got in. I came straight up.
Well, how is Seattle? You saw this fellow Prescott?
I sure did. Found out he has more gold secreted in Vancouver.
Good work. Where's he got it?
Oh, he's not telling. I trapped him into admitting he had it. But he was smart enough to say he wanted to think it over and consult with his lawyer before disclosing its whereabouts.
I see. Well, what do you make of that?
I think he's going to hand over the gold in an attempt to clear himself. But for some reason, he doesn't want us to know its hiding place.
How was his attitude?
Oh, tried playing innocent, of course. Wasn't his intention at all to smuggle it into Canada or into the States. He was just ignorant of the laws, he said.
Any information about how he came by the gold in the first place?
Oh, says he owns it. Earned it honestly. But he had no evidence at all. Did you find out anything from this end, sir?
Not much. He's been here 3 months from Australia, registered at the Dawson Hotel, new to the country, never been here before.
But he must have made some friends since he got here. I'd like to know his accomplice, or maybe he has more than one.
Well, we've been working on that, of course, but haven't got anything so far.
Sorry to barge in, sir, but you said if we got anything further on Prescott...
Yes, Stevens, what is it?
Maybe not relevant, but I've been posted at his hotel. And a phone call just came in for Prescott from Greenville, just across the border.
Greenville, huh? Who from?
Mr. Jones. But the hotel manager says he recognized the voice as that of a man who's been visiting Prescott at the hotel a great deal these past weeks.
Ah. Does he know the man's real name?
No, he can't remember. He'd remember it if he heard it, he says.
Stevens, check with the border officials. See who crossed in the past few days from Vancouver.
Yes, sir.
Excuse me. Hello? Yes? Oh, yes. Yes, Mr. Wainwright, I see. Would you mind telling me where it is so that we can pick it up ourselves? Oh, is that so? Very well. Yes, you have it delivered here as soon as you can. Thank you. Goodbye. Selkirk, that was D.G. Wainwright, Prescott's lawyer.
Really?
Yes, he's going to bring us the rest of the gold, but won't tell us where it is. Now, you take a couple of men. Get over to Wainwright's office immediately. Watch him. See where he goes. They've got a good reason for not wanting us to know where the hiding place of that gold is. Now, see if you can find it. And hurry.
I hope we haven't missed him, Corporal.
Yeah. It's a big office building. He could have got out without us seeing him.
Or maybe he left before we got here. Who is this Wainwright?
A very clever lawyer. Just the kind a man like Prescott would get. He always stays within the law, but he causes us a lot of trouble.
Good thing you know what he looks like.
I have a feeling that if we can find where that gold is stored, we'll also find the evidence we want against Prescott.
That makes sense. Otherwise, it wouldn't go so anxious to...
Wait a minute. I think... Yeah, here he comes.
Wainwright?
Just coming out, that short, fat fella. Don't look directly at him. Look past him.
He's getting into a car, thank goodness. He'll be easy to follow.
Yeah, start her up. We'll have to stay pretty close to him in this traffic. Let's not lose him now.
Hello, Constable Thompson. Inspector here. On that gold smuggling case, Harry Prescott. I just got an answer from the border about the information Stevens was requesting. They say a Ben Suter from Vancouver crossed the border yesterday traveling by bus. Now, here's what I want you to do. Put a check on all Greenville hotels. See if he's staying there. Yeah, that's right. Now then, also see what you can find out about him from this end. He'll probably be in the gold business. Start with jewelers and dealers. Let me know as soon as you find anything. Good. Yes, that's all. Selker, what on earth have you got there?
Right here, okay, Corporal?
Yeah, thanks, Stevens. Here, sir, is our evidence on Harry Prescott.
That box?
This is only one of 12. He had them stored at Blakeney's warehouse. That's where we tailed Wainwright, too.
Well, let's see the box.
Looks empty, doesn't it?
Looks empty? What is empty?
We dumped a stack of books and junk out of it, but now watch, sir. Stevens, you still got that hammer?
Here you are, Corporal.
Thanks.
A false bottom.
Yes, sir. There you are.
Well, I...
In these 12 neatly chiseled sections, Prescott had hidden his solid gold bars. The gold has been removed from half the boxes. We took possession of the rest.
So he brought this into the country in perfect innocence, did he?
You'll have trouble making that story stick now, sir.
Yes? Yes, Thompson? Is that right? Yes, go on. Gold and Smelting Company, eh? Looks like our man, all right. Fine, I'll take it from here. Well, Selkirk, the accomplice is one Ben Suter, at the moment waiting for his friend Prescott in Greenville.
Suter? Why, I know him. He's nearly slipped a couple of times.
Well, he's slipped properly this time. I'd better notify officials in Greenville to pick him up before he makes a break for it. Well, this cleans up the case, Corporal. You did a fine job. And so Prescott couldn't talk his way out of that one.
He finally pleaded guilty, did he?
Yes. To a charge of smuggling gold into the United States. Though he served a sentence down there, and on his arrival back in Canada, he was immediately deported.
Did you ever find out where he got the gold?
Yes. Oh, he had obtained it illegally, of course, in Australia. He was dealt with by officials there as soon as he was sent back. And so the nearly perfect crime was utterly shattered.
A syndicated recording from 1954 of The Queen's Men. You're listening to an hour of collection curios on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm Mark Levonier. Next, a program whose premise was endearing enough to live on from its origins in the pages of This Week magazine in the 1940s, but never really had the staying power beyond print. In the summer of 1946, NBC Radio transformed author Matt Taylor's characters, the somewhat slow but earnest detective Dan McGarry and his companion Kitty Archer, known as the Mouse, in the show McGarry and His Mouse. It starred film actor Wendell Corey as the lead in this summer replacement for comedian Eddie Cantor's program, which, while it was in a great time slot, it only got one more chance in the winter of the following year on the Mutual Broadcasting System for a short 3 months. Even CBS Television tried to develop it in 1960, but didn't get past the pilot stage. The debut episode of the show next, from June 26, 1946, on NBC.
Calling all cars, calling all cars. Has anyone seen Detective McGarry?
Yes, Sarge, I have.
Who are you?
Detective McGarry!
Yes, friends, it's McGarry and His Mouse, starring Wendell Corey with Peggy Conklin. The misadventures of rookie Detective McGarry have been made famous by Matt Taylor in the pages of This Week magazine. And now here he is, Dan McGarry himself, handsome as ever, brave as ever, and confused as ever.
I guess most dolls have a couple of strikes on most guys when it comes to the thinking department. Especially Kitty Archer. Hey, she's the cute little mouse I've been going together with for some time now. The machinery in her noggin is always in high gear, which is a wonderful thing, except that sometimes... Well, take one morning last week. On the way to headquarters, I'm dropping her off to work at the airline's office where she works.
Now, Dan, you remember what you're supposed to do at noon.
Yeah, Kitty. As soon as I get my paycheck, I meet you at the bank and we sock it away toward that there rainy day.
Oh, not toward a rainy day, Dan. Toward the bright day when we get married and have our own home.
Yeah, Mousley. A playroom for the kid.
Oh, Dan.
Well, Kitty, you're always bawling me out for not thinking of the future.
Now, don't be late. And after we go to the bank, we may have time to go to Holdsman's and get your new shoes.
Don't worry. I'll be there on the button. So long, Mouse.
So long, Dan.
Good morning, Sarge. Hey, the paychecks get here yet?
Yeah, and here's yours.
What are you going to do with it, McGarry? Frame it with the rest of them?
Suppose I am, Decker. It'll make a pretty picture one of these here days. Hey, where's all the boys?
Oh, they're in the squad room. We raided a gambling joint last night, and they're giving the equipment a workout.
You mean they're gambling? In police headquarters?
Sure. Say, how about you coming in and laying a few bucks on the line, huh?
Gambling's against the law.
Well, if you're nervous about it, we can have somebody stand outside the door and watch for cops.
Nothing doing. If I bust into my check, Kitty'd hand me my ears.
You sure have a tough time getting any distance from a buck, don't you, McGarry? What do? Soak your roll in mucilage?
Are you hinting I'm a miser?
Oh, no, McGarry. Compared to you, a miser's a playboy.
Okay, Mr. Wise Guy. I'll play you for a couple of bucks.
You sure you can spare it?
Never mind the cracks. Let's get in there and toss them dominoes.
Okay, let's go.
Decker, it's gonna be a pleasure for me to teach a guy like you that gambling don't pay. Kitty, I can explain everything.
Dan McGarry, where have you been? My lunch hour is nearly over.
Well, I was sort of held up at headquarters. They had a very special case.
What kind of a case?
Well, they raided a gambling joint last night, and I had to... Well, I had to help check over the evidence.
Oh. Well, if I had my way, I'd put every gambler behind bars.
You would, huh, Mouse?
Absolutely. People who gamble should be taught a lesson.
You're right. I always said myself that gambling don't pay.
Well, we'll never have any trouble on that account. Come on, we still have time to deposit your paycheck.
Hey, Mouse.
Yes?
I got something fierce to tell you.
Dan, what's the matter?
We ain't got no business with no bank today on account of I ain't got no dough.
You haven't...
I lost it, Mouse. I'm clean as a new butcher block.
Oh. Well, let's hurry then and get to the bank right away.
Well, what for?
To have the check stopped.
Stopped?
Yes, just in case some dishonest person found it.
Wait, kitty. I didn't lose the check. I lost the dough. Every penny of it.
Dan.
Yeah, Mouse, ain't it fierce?
But how did you lose it?
Oh, Mouse, I hate to even think about that. It gives me a terrible headache, and the pigeons are beating the lining out of my stomach.
Oh, Dan, you're so careless.
I'm a dope.
If only you wouldn't go stuffing money into your pockets the way you do. You probably pulled it out with your handkerchief.
Gee, I wish I'd have thought of that in the first place. I mean, I bet you think I'm pretty stupid.
No, darling. Just careless. But the situation isn't hopeless. Come on.
Where are we going now?
To the Daily Bulletin office. We've just got time to get a lost and found ad in the afternoon edition.
But, Kitty...
I'll put my phone number in it, so if anybody calls during the day, Mom will be there to answer. There is a chance that some honest person may have found your money.
Kitty, the guy that's got my dough ain't answering no ads.
Well, at least we can take that gamble.
Kitty, gamble?
Oh, Kitty, will you answer the phone? I got my hands full here in the kitchen.
Okay, Mom, I've got it. Hello?
Hello? Is this Regent 74599?
Yes.
Are you the party that advertised in the bulletin offering a $50 reward for the recovery of a certain sum of money lost in the vicinity of Montgomery and Charles Street?
Yes, that's right.
Well, I found a sum of money in the gutter at Montgomery and Prince Streets. If you can tell me the denominations of the bills, I will be glad to consider you the rightful owner.
Oh, well, let me see. I think Dan said they were... Oh, yes, I remember now. They were 5 20s and 10 tens.
Making a total of $200.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be correct. Now, if you'll give me your address, I'll restore your property and collect my modest reward.
Oh, wonderful. It's 37 Forsyth Avenue.
This is a very fortunate coincidence. I'm phoning from a booth not very far from there. I'll be right over. Goodbye.
Goodbye, and thank you. Oh, Mom, Mom.
Yes, Kitty, what is it?
Oh, Mom, the most wonderful thing just happened. The most wonderful thing ever.
Now, for heaven's sakes, child, don't burst a blood vessel. What is it? What happened?
People are good. People are honest. Oh, I'm so thrilled.
Fine, fine. Now that you've made up your mind about people, will you please tell me why you're so excited?
Well, you know the money Dan lost?
Yes.
It's been found. A man just called, and he's bringing it right over.
What?
Every cent of it, the whole $200. Oh, that must be Dan. He'll be so excited when I tell him the news.
Hiya, Mouse.
Oh, Dan, come in. I've got the most wonderful surprise for you.
My goodness, Mouse. You're bouncing like a ping pong ball. What's up?
Guess who's coming here to the house?
Why, none other than your old Aunt Bella.
Nope. It's the man that's got the money you lost.
What, that bum? He shows his kiss around my girl. I'm going... What did you say?
I said, the man who found the money you've lost is on his way here with your $200.
The man who found...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hey, no, Mouse, that can't be. That's impossible.
It's a fact. He just called in answer to my ad. He found the money in the gutter at Montgomery and Prince.
In the... Was it alone, Mouse? I mean, was anybody in the gutter with it? Oh, hey, this here's got me bewildered something fierce.
I knew you'd be terribly surprised.
Surprised? You have no idea.
Dan, I'm so happy for you. Oh, that must be the man now.
Now, listen, Kitty, before this guy comes
in... Wait a minute,
Dan. But, Mouse...
Gosh, I'm so excited. This is too wonderful to believe.
You're telling me. Likely I'm getting some poor widow woman's last $200.
Good evening, lady. My name is Mapes. I'm the gentleman who fooled you about the money.
Oh, come right in.
Don't mind if I do.
I must say I admire your honesty, Mr. Mapes.
Well, as my old mother used to say, honesty is the best policy. Leave every man his own. As ye reap, so shall ye sow. Oh, she had a lot of them.
How nice. Mr. Mapes, this is Mr. McGarry, my fiancé. He's the man who lost the money.
Oh, is that so? Mr. McGarry, you're a very lucky fella.
Yeah. Pleased to meet you.
Thanks. And now to get to the reason for which I came here. I'm very happy to restore your loss. There you are, sir. 5 twenties and 10 tens. Totaling the sum of $200 gross.
Oh, Dan, isn't this marvelous?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Now, we mustn't forget the reward. $50 is what we advertised. Right, Mr. Mapes?
Right. Hey, Kitty, I got an idea. Since this here gentleman is such a first-class honest guy and didn't go and swipe the 200 when he had it right in his mitt, I think he ought to keep the whole roll as his reward.
The whole 200? Well, that's ridiculous.
I'm perfectly satisfied with the modest sum of $50. But you could do me a small favor if you're so inclined.
Oh, we'd be glad to, Mr. Mapes.
Well, it so happens that my brother is in a hospital in Philadelphia, and I'm planning to use this reward to pay his expenses. Now, if it'd be possible for you to give me a check for the $50, I could mail it directly to him, and it would save me the trouble of getting a money order.
How about a check for the whole 200?
Oh, Dan, stop joking.
But, Mouse, you
don't... Of course, Mr. Mapes. We'll gladly do you that favor. Dan, there's a pen in the secretary. Get out your checkbook and make out a check. For $50.
Would you make it out to cash, please?
Mr. Mapes, won't you sit down?
Why, thanks just the same, miss, but I'll have to be running along as soon as the check is ready.
Well, just as you say. I don't know how we can ever thank you.
Oh, that's all right. As my dear old mother used to say, no king's coffers hold greater treasure than the gratitude of the human heart. A word of thanks.
There you are, Mr. Mapes. $50 made out to Kay.
Thank you, indeed. And now, if you don't mind, I'll be on my way.
Well, you've certainly made us very happy.
Well, the pleasure is mine. As my dear old mother used to say, a deed well done is a deed well done. Good night, Mr. McGarry, and a word of advice. Hold on to your money.
Hold on to it? With guys like you around, I don't see how I can lose it.
Good night, Mr. Mapes.
Good night.
Oh, Dan, isn't this wonderful? Isn't it marvelous? Wait here till I get my hat.
We going out?
Yes, Hall's new shoe store is open till 9 tonight, and we're going to get those new shoes for you.
That's my future wife talking.
Oh, and maybe we'll have enough time to see the last show at the Bijou and have a soda afterwards to sort of celebrate your good luck. Dan, you are lucky, you know.
Maybe, Mouse, but I feel like I'm playing a poker hand with 5 aces in it.
Well, here we go back into the state of confusion surrounding Detective Dan McGarry. There he is with $200 he knows doesn't belong to him because Mr. Mapes couldn't have found it because, well, he lost it gambling. Anyway, Kitty thinks it's really Dan's money and has hauled him downtown for some shopping and celebrating. Keep your fingers crossed and let's see what happens.
Why, Dan, your new shoes are lovely. So distinguished looking.
I'm glad you like them, Mouse, but they look so dainty to me, I feel like I ought to hop into a ballet dance.
Here's your change, sir. $8.75 out of $20.
Only a short wait for seats. Move right along, folks.
How many, please?
2. 1 for me and 1 for my girl.
That's 130 out of 10. Thank you.
Oh, Dan, while we're here at the sweet shop, let's get a box of candy for Bernice.
Oh, yeah, for her birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we better get this big one here on account of she's such a good friend of yours.
Oh, yes, that one will be fine.
When are you going to give it to her?
Why, on her birthday, of course. Don't tell me you forgot our dinner date with Bernice and Joe on Wednesday night.
Who, me? No, I had it in the back of my head all the time.
That'll be $4.50 for the candy and 40 cents for sodas. That's $4.90 out of 10, right?
Right. Good morning, Sarge.
Hey, Gary, you better get into the inspector's office quick. He's been hollering for you.
Uncle Matthew's been hollering for me. What kind of a mood does he happen to be in?
Why, he's his own usual sweet, smiling self.
Yeah. This don't sound so good.
And I want this gang rounded up by this evening. I'll have no excuses.
I want the whole downtown district covered. Every department store, every restaurant.
Hey,
every...
Uncle Matthew, did you want me?
Well, Detective McGarry, it's nice of you to honor us with your presence.
Oh, that's all right, Uncle Matthew.
Sit down. We just got reports from three different places in the downtown district that counterfeit bills were passed on them last night. Now, all we know is that all three places think the bills were passed by a guy and a good-looking dame. I want those counterfeiters down here at headquarters by tonight. Now, out with you on the streets. Every one of you. And don't come back here without results. Go on, get out.
Uncle Matthew, do you have any definite description of these here people?
Not too definite. At Halsman's, the Bijou Theater, and the Crystal Palace Sweet Shop, they all agreed that he was tall, had a ruddy complexion. As a matter of fact, I'd say he looked something like yourself.
Yeah? He ought to be a cinch for me to spot. If I couldn't recognize a guy that looks like me, I'd be pretty stupid, wouldn't I? I'm from police headquarters, buddy. Anybody been trying to pass any phony dough on you this morning?
Why, no. We haven't had any trouble, officer.
Well, watch out. Here, I'll take a couple of those 2 for a quarter cigars. Can you change a 20? No counterfeit money, huh? You're lucky, lady. Well, while I'm here, I might as well buy a present for my mouse. If you run across any bum dough, mister, give me a buzz. Hey, how about the change for my 10 spot?
Where is it? Where's that concrete-brained nephew of mine?
Uncle Matthew, what's the matter? Come in.
Where is he, I say?
Hey, Uncle Matthew, what's all this here hollering about?
I knew I'd find you here. If I was a man of violence, I'd tear a limb off you.
Matthew McGarry, can't a young man visit his girl without you bellowing after him like a bull?
Visiting his girl, is he? And the department in the grip of a wave of counterfeiting. I assign men to a special detail to check the city. Among the detail is my brilliant young nephew, Dan McGarry.
Well, what did I do that was wrong? I checked every store on my beat.
And a fine check it must have been. All evening complaints have been coming in from merchants that had bum bills passed on them. And every single one of them was on your beat. Your beat.
Well, what do you know?
Why, the counterfeiter must have been tugging at your coattails. And you didn't even have sense to reach for it.
Uncle Matthew, don't be so upset about it. If the passer is working Dan's beat, he'll get him all right. You just wait.
The mouse knows what she's talking about. I'll have that cheap dip in the clink before you know it.
The guy's probably following you around. He knows if you're near him, he's safe.
Now, Matthew, it takes time to catch crooks. Especially if they're clever ones.
Time, and me sitting there with merchants screaming and nagging at me all day. It was bad enough this morning with the manager of Halsman's shoe store threatening to go to the commissioner. And that guy from the Bijou Theater saying he was going to write to the paper. And the Crystal Palace sweet shop. And this evening it starts all over again.
Halsman's shoe store? The Bijou? Why, we were... Good heavens. Dan?
Yeah, Kitty?
Come on, we're going for a walk.
Kitty, where are you going?
I have to get something at the drugstore, Mom. We'll be right back. Come on, Dan.
Oh, Margaret. I don't know what's happening to the younger generation of cops. Now, when I was a young...
Hey, what's the matter, Kitty? You tore out of the house like somebody hollered fire.
Just a minute, Dan. Don't say anything yet.
Okay, Mouse, but you're acting terrible mysterious.
All right, now, wait a minute. They can't hear us here. Listen, Dan, I've just figured out something. I know who's been passing out those counterfeit bills.
You do, Mouse? Tell me who it is and I'll put the arm on him.
I don't think you'll be too anxious to put the arm on this person.
Why, is it somebody we know?
Somebody we know and love, Dan. Somebody close to us all. It just came to me up on the porch.
Oh, hey, Kitty. You don't suspect Uncle Matthew.
No, Dan. It's not Uncle Matthew.
Then who is it?
It's you.
Huh? Me?
Yes, you. Don't you see, Dan, we were in Haldeman's shoe store last night. We were at the Bijou Theater and the Crystal Palace.
I know, Mouse.
Dan, have you got any bills on you now?
Oh, sure, Mouse. Look here. Hey, a real handsome robe.
Let me see. Mm-hmm. Just as I thought. Look at this 20 and look at this 10. They're counterfeit, Dan. Counterfeit.
Are you sure, Mouse?
Positive. I handle a lot of bills at the airline office. I wouldn't take a bale of these for a bus ride to the airport.
Hey, Mouse, this year's got me bewildered. How come I show up a criminal all of a sudden?
Can't you see it, Dan? Mr. Mapes is the counterfeiter. That wasn't your money. He found it all.
That I'm very willing to believe.
It was all face money. That's why he didn't want the reward in cash.
So he took my good check and slipped me a sheaf of very phony-looking wrapping paper.
Mm-hmm, that's it.
Holy smoke, Mouse. Then I'm the man I've been looking for.
Yes, Dan, you are.
Oh, for goodness sake. This here's fierce. Do you know what it means, Kitty? It means I got to arrest myself.
Arrest yourself?
I'm duty bound. When I got on the force, I took an oath to uphold the law regardless. Detective McGarry, a passer of bum dough. Kitty, I got to go and turn myself in.
Wait, Dana, don't be too hasty. There's no need to give yourself up tonight.
No?
No, let's take a couple of days to figure this out. Besides, tomorrow's Bernice's birthday, and we promised to take Joe and her to Charlie's Tavern for dinner. We can't disappoint them.
Well, okay. We'll do like you say, Mouse. But I'll have to give myself up right after dinner.
Meantime, if they catch Mr. Mapes, that would clear you.
Well, chance of that, Mouse. Mr. Mapes ain't waiting around for no cop to put the arm on him.
But there must be a way to catch him, Dan. There must be some way. We've got to figure something out.
Kitty, the only bright spot in my future now is I'm going to get a good meal under my belt before they turn the key on me.
Happy birthday, dear Bernice. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, gee. Thanks, everybody. This makes me a very happy person.
Oh, don't mention it, Bernice. Now I gotta go and do my sworn duty.
You're gonna give yourself up, huh, Dan?
Yeah, Bernice. I'm gonna call headquarters.
Wait, Dan, not yet. Give your dinner a chance to digest.
It's no use waiting, Mouse. I might as well get it over.
But you, a little while longer won't do any harm.
Gosh, Kitty, I know just how you feel. Why, I used to feel terrible when my Joe here used to leave me to go to night school. Huh, Joe?
Yeah, night school.
But don't you worry, Dan. They say the jails nowadays are very nice. Huh, Joe?
Yeah, nice.
Bernice, no place is nice where you can't grab your hat and leave when you got the urge.
Well, I'm glad you got a good meal anyway, Dan.
My last meal.
Oh, gosh, that's interesting. His last meal, just like a guy that's going to be executed.
Oh, hey, Bernice.
Well, no matter what happens, Dan, me and Joe will visit you regular. Won't we, Joe?
Yeah, regular.
Bernice. What's the matter, Kitty?
I want to talk to you. Will you boys excuse us a minute?
Sure, Mom.
Sure, Kitty.
Come on, Bernice. What's the matter, Kitty? You look like you saw a ghost. It worked, Bernice. It worked. There he is at the bar talking to Charlie.
Who? Oh, the counterfeit fella.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gee, Kitty. You really fell for that ad you put in the paper this morning. Come on, let's grab him.
No, not yet. Remember, I put your name in the ad. Wait till Charlie calls you. Then go over and let Mr. Mapes give you the money. The counterfeit money.
Yeah. Oh, gee, I hope I can remember everything I'm supposed to say.
There, Charlie's nodding towards you now. Go ahead, I'll go get Dan.
Oh, gosh, Kitty, this is terrible exciting.
Joe, where did Dan go?
Phone. Calling headquarters.
Calling headquarters? Oh, for goodness sakes, I've got to stop him.
Face phone booth up front.
And so we don't need to.
Oh, Dan.
Just a minute,
Mouse. What are you doing?
Yeah, I was good. Just as I was going to say, Sarge, we don't need to look no further. I got the guy that's been passing the bum dough here and about.
Dan, stop it.
Be right with you, Kitty. What'd you say, Sarge? Oh, no. You don't need to send no radio cars. This guy'll come in easy. And I think you got the surprise of your life waiting for you.
Dan, give me that receiver.
Oh, hey, Kitty. What's the matter? You ain't getting mad at me before I depart, are you?
Of course not. Look, over there at the bar.
Yeah. My old friend, Charlie. I better say goodbye to him, too.
Not Charlie. Mr. Mapes.
Mr. You mean the guy with the phony dough? Well, for goodness sake.
That's right. There's your counterfeiter.
Jerry, this is a wonderful break. I always knew I'd run into that guy sometimes. Good thing I'm on my toes.
It certainly is. Well, what are you waiting for?
Okay, Mouse. I'll put the arm on him right now.
I consider it a real pleasure to return a person's rightful property to the rightful owner. Now, young lady, if you'll just make out the check for the reward to cash, please.
Oh, sure. Gee, this is wonderful getting back my money.
Yes, you're a lucky little lady. As my dear old mother used to say.
Wait up, Mr. Mapes. I've got something more important to say than your old lady.
I beg your pardon. Have we met?
We sure have. I got your John Henry on a canceled check of mine to prove it.
A business transaction, sir, does not constitute a social introduction.
This ain't social, bud. Take a look at this. It's a police badge. And it ain't counterfeit.
Hmm. Okay, officer. I see argument is futile. My fate rests with you and my estimable attorney.
Let's go.
My arm, officer.
You ain't going to be around for a while, Mr. Mapes. You're out of circulation like your bum dough.
Well, my dear old mother used to say, stone walls do not a prison make, or iron bars a cage. Silly, wasn't it?
Well, Kitty, I'm an honest man again. I paid back Holtzman's and the Bijou and all the other places.
Well, no one ever doubted your honesty, darling.
No, huh? I guess they just thought I was, well, sort of dumb.
Why, Dan, how could they after the brilliant way you caught up with Mr. Mapes?
Yeah, I guess you're right. And you know something else why I'm not as dumb as you might think?
No, why?
You know that $50 reward I gave Mr. Mapes?
Yes.
I made him give it back to me.
Oh, Dan, how marvelous. Oh, wait a minute. Did you examine the bills?
Bills? Gee, Mouse, I'm not that stupid. I made him give me a check.
McGarry and His Mouse, from the 26th of June, 1946 on NBC. And back to the shelves they go. That wraps up this hour of Collection Curios on Tuned to Yesterday. Be with us again for more lesser-known shows from radio's golden era. I'm Mark Livonier. Thanks for listening.